All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Breaking Western Podcast. We are in season four.
Oh,
we went
whoa.
High today. I
thought
you were going to be on the low one.
What are you saying?
I'm sorry. Season four, going four, broke, where we talk about what it means to be a mindful consumer and interviewing some of the best of the North, South, East, and West. Industry.
See what you did there.
Yep. So, Abby, who do we have on today?
I'm stoked about our guest today. I feel like I say that every week, but I mean it. I mean it every time. Today we have Sidel from Kanaini Shop. She came highly recommended to us by a number of people because they love her looks, and so do we. You probably have seen her buckaroo cowls, or maybe you've seen a buckaroo cowl that wasn't hers, but this is where they came from, y'all. So we're super stoked to talk to her today. She has a number of really other beautiful pieces. And we're stoked to have a minute to get to know her and hear her story. So Sidel, welcome.
What's up, girl?
Hey. Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Honestly, I think you've been our most recommended guest from other guests.
For real.
Yeah, people just, they love you. What else can we say?
They love what you're doing.
So let's go back to the beginning of your story, like kind of what inspired you to get started with any of this, and also where did your shop name come from, Kanaini? That's so unique.
Right. So I'm going to try to make this short and sweet. It kind of is a long story. I left college, went back home. I ended up in an internship, a job that I really loved, a really professional job. But then I had my two kids while I was there at the job for about 5 years. And I hadn't actually finished my degree. So I was like, you know, a handful of classes from it, but I had got this amazing job. So that kept me from getting back to work. But once I had my kids, I was like, I really got to go. Like, I really had already made this deal with myself that I would finish that degree. And, this job, even though I love it, is not what I want to do. So after my second baby, I was like on the maternity leave. I was going crazy because I'm used to being like a really busybody person. I grew up in a household that ran a small business also. My parents had a construction company, so it was like work all the time. And so I was going kind of nuts, and my mother-in-law at the time was like, so I'm going to bring my sewing machine over. And I'm like, I've never even seen a sewing machine, so I don't know what you expect.
What's that?
Yeah. She's like, oh, I'll just bring it over and I can show you how to use it. And she's super sweet. And I was like, okay, all right, let's try this. So I started just kind of making some stuff. And then I was like, you know, if I'm going to be going back to school, I can't work full time. I can't, you know, I should try to see if I can make something that, that other people like, you know, like I feel like I have a pretty good sense of style and I've, you know, have an idea of what items I would use, I would wear. So that's generally how I got into this idea of even trying to make anything. And so when we moved, you know, we had two small children, I was in school full time. And so things were really slow. Officially, I started my business in 2015 just because my undergrad is in health management and policy. So I was taking like a business suite of classes, and they're like, oh, you got to have, you know, these things in a row. So that kind of helped me get that set up, you know, officially with the state of Oregon, although I didn't sell like one thing for that whole year. I'm sure lots of people can relate to this because I started with an Etsy shop thinking this is going to be great. And the first thing that I made was like these little fanny packs. Because I'm that person that, like, if it's not attached to me, I will leave it everywhere I go. I still am that person. So that's why I don't carry any of my bags. So after that first year, so like 2016, I had finished my undergrad degrees. I have two, actually, anthropology and public health. And then I was like, I think I'm going to get a master's. So now I have to, like, continue this down this road. And I started doing like a couple of pop-up sales, and you know, like maybe even some powwows, you know, where it's like fairly low fee to get in, and just see what people like, because that was my problem. I was only making what I wanted to make, and I wasn't like in front of a bunch of people. So, like, miraculously, I got into like every show, every juried show that I applied for. So I just did this,
yes,
like,
ma'am,
craft market show, urban craft. What's the one in Portland? Like America's Largest Christmas Bazaar. I did Urban Craft Uprising, Crafty Wonderland. And then I got into like the Raw, and I actually, they asked me to do an actual like model runway show. So,
okay.
I just tried everything in those first couple of years. And honestly, the cowls I made for my kids first, because they wouldn't wear a coat. They wouldn't keep their hood on. They wouldn't, you know, so I made them really tiny out of my scraps. And
oh,
we'd go to,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, we'd go to these shows and people would be like, oh my gosh, that's so cute. So I started making a little bit bigger ones and a little bit bigger ones and kind of like testing those sizes. And every time I went, I'd only make like two or three. And every time I'd go, they were the first thing to go. And so that obviously showed me like where I needed to focus more of that attention. So that then around 2017, it just blew up because I stopped selling on Etsy. I really started trying to curate more on my Instagram page, and then I got my website, and after that it all kind of just went, it just bloomed. As far as the name, it was really not hard for me to think of the name. Back on the reservation where I grew up, the hill that I grew up on is called Kenaini Ridge, and it's in the boonies. We're the only house out there. Lived there my whole life. My dad still lives there, and the ridge is named after a Walla Walla chief named Jim Kenaini, and that's, so place names are really important, you know, in Native cultures, and because I came from that place and I grew up in that place my whole life, and even like around town, like people knew that I lived on Kenaini, like that it was kind of already associated with me, and so I just kind of brought that name with me. And I really do like explaining that because place names are so important, and being able to share that story and share the place that is so special to me.
That's beautiful.
That is really beautiful, especially when you're making something, right, that comes from deep inside of you. So it comes from like your physical place that you're from, but it comes from you as well. So it's really cool to be able to be like fully represent yourself in that way.
Absolutely. Yes. And you know, it's the place that I miss right now because I'm here at school. So I live in Corvallis and it's about 5 hours away, but it's definitely my peaceful place, you know, my calm place. And when I really, really first started this and where I put the name down on paper, I was sitting at my dad's kitchen table and I had just made a jacket, a first kid's coat. And I had borrowed my sister-in-law's pattern because she'd made some before. It's like not a new thing in our community to make things out of these blankets. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. So I had made it on my dad's kitchen table and he came home and was like, oh, what are you making? And I was like, oh, I made a jacket. And he was like, oh, that's cool. He's like, I think I still have yours in the closet. And I was like, excuse me? Like, what are you?
What?
Yeah. He was like, totally my dad though. He's just like, oh yeah, go look in this closet. And I go look and pull out a little tiny jacket made out of Pendleton, which I still have right now in my closet. And he's like, your mom made that for you, like when you were one or whatever. And he's like, and you wore it, you know, when you were probably two.
Oh, like, my heart.
I know, right? I remember seeing, I had found a box of pictures and I remember seeing myself in this damn jacket. And I was like, wow, thanks for telling me 35 years down the road.
Everything in its perfect time.
Yeah. Well, and that really was like full circle. I'm like, that's my little, I don't know, sign that's what I'm supposed to do. Cause I'd really sat down that day and been like, what would my name be? I thought about naming after my kids. And I was like, no, it really should be something that is me, you know? And after that whole story, my mom passed away when I was three. so she had made it before I passed, before she passed away, and I got to wear it for her, you know, before she left us. And so I was like, that is my full circle sign that, like, the right thing and the right place for me to do this whole business thing and really switch gears and return back to school. And that led to where I am now. And I finished my master's in public health, and now I'm just a dissertation away from my PhD in health promotion and health behavior. And the business has, like, really carried my whole family this whole way. So I wouldn't really be here if I didn't choose to kind of stick my neck out there and try something new. So it's been great.
Whoa.
Holy cow.
I don't even know where to start after that.
Thank God you asked what a sewing machine was.
I know. Can you imagine?
Oh, my gosh.
I was a really late bloomer because literally every woman in my family, like, sews, were very, you know, traditional. Like, we have dresses that I've worn that my grandma made, you know, buckskin dresses and stuff. So I was a very late bloomer, but it has also kind of given me this little push that I needed that, like, yes, this feel comfortable in your skills and your talent. And I've actually started making now, I've just cut out and I'm starting on making my girls, their traditional regalia dresses to wear next year.
Oh, beautiful.
Wow. That's funny. I feel like sometimes, even though, we know it's something that we should be doing or we would, like, be good at, we don't want to do it because, our families are doing it or, like, our parents did it or, like, I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Like, they're already good at it.
They're already doing it. I want to be different.
Yes.
But it sounds like all of this is such a personal journey for you. Like, making this product, this end result is just that. It's just the end result of this long personal story.
Yeah.
And a lot of it sounds like it came to you. I don't want to say, like, naturally, but it came to you because, you know, this was, like, your journey or your path. So I'm wondering if you could, if you could tell us on why it's, like, so important to support, indigenous makers or business owners, especially in the Western industry, when we're looking at pieces like this, especially these, like, Pendleton pieces or pieces made from blankets that do have such a personal story and long history.
Yeah. That's a great question. And first, I mean, I guess I should start by saying, like, Pendleton kind of gets a bad rap sometimes from especially Native, you know, Native communities that feel that they've sort of stripped something away from these tribal nations and not, maybe not given it back. And I'm not saying that has not happened. Some of the first blankets that were made were called Cayuse blankets, and Cayuse is actually one of the tribes that I'm from. So I'm Cayuse, Walla Walla, and Yakima. And because our tribes are really close to the mill right there in Pendleton, right? They're, like, butted up to each other, the reservation and the mill. We've always had a good relationship with them. We, you know, my family has participated in the roundup every year. I mean, since its inception, really, with setting our tents up and everything. So that's a question that I get a lot. Like, why do you still use Pendleton blankets and not use other ones? And that's actually not true because I do use other blankets. I've used the eighth generation blankets, which are really soft and fluffy, and they do a really good job of working with Native artists to design those. So I make sure that when those new blankets come out, that I do incorporate them into my business. I use Teton Trade Cloth, which is really good for solids. They have a really long-standing history with all Native cultures also that use them for dresses. Like, their striped pattern on the bottom of dresses you'll see in several different regions are very prominent for what they use with their regalia. So I try to incorporate them. There's been some new ones that came out, like Thunder Voice Eagle partnered with that Sackcloth and Ashes and Naomi Glasses, and I've used those ones. So I try to sprinkle it around, but I stay true to my roots, which is the Pendleton blankets. And I think that just leads right into, you know, your main question is, like, why support me? I mean, I'm out there buying Pendleton blankets. I don't want to support Pendleton, but really you know, it's a community thing. Like, I can walk into that Pendleton store, I can call, and they know my name. They know me. They have my family's pictures hanging in the gallery. Like, if you take the tour, you can go see, like, and they have photos and stories of the relationships that they've had with these tribes and these families that are very tight-knit right there at the mill. And so I like that. I like, you know, just being able to go into my hometown mill and talk to all the gals that are super helpful there. If I have questions, if I call, you know, I'm in Corvallis. I'm like, hey, is there anything there that I would be interested in? They're more than happy to help. So, I mean, that's kind of an aside, but that also leads me to like this whole idea of community. And so why supporting Indigenous makers is so important is because you're like me as a prime example, I wouldn't have been able to finish, you know, my master's degree. I had another baby during my master's degree. So now we have three girls.
Whoa.
And, yeah. Intense. I gave birth a week term in spring. And she is a little older. So then, you know, paying for childcare for my three kids while I'm then pursuing my PhD and all of that would have not ever been able to happen if I didn't have this business that was, you know, doing so well for our family. And it's really just partially like being able to share Indigenous stories, like Native stories, right? Like the story of me, how I got to where I am today is important because it's not in the mainstream, right? It's not out there. We're just now starting to see little peaks of like Indigenous representation in, you know, films and TV and all of that in modeling, the modeling world. And so the more exposure that people like me can provide to why it's important for me to, you know, pass along, you know, when you buy something, that helps me feed my family. That helps me pursue my education so that I can, you know, up the standards, make things easier for my kids, because I didn't have it easy as a kid. You know, my parents, my grandparents did not have it easy. And so to be able to like make these big moves is directly tied to the support that I get from my followers, the support that I get from people who shop with me and are very loyal, I've found. So thank you very much. And then I'm able to pass that along. So there's been a few times we had like major flooding last year. And so I did like some little donations. I'm like, okay, I'm going to auction off these things to donate to my community, because we had major flooding and people just like completely ousted out of their homes. But also, you know, just being able to go home and offer gifts, right? So like we're big mm-hmm. into gifts. Lots of things. And I always had some of the organizations from back home say, hey, we have like these group of employees that were able or that we're honoring for like they've had 10 or 20 or 25 years of service. And we really would like to give them one of your items. And so I'm able to, you know, because I'm stable here, I'm able to just gift cowls to these sort of important events that I think are that I should support, I think that are great, I think that are healing and helping our communities. And so that's part of it. Just what else did I have? People, I always tell people, they're like, and this goes for all of my hats that I wear, you know, so I work in a research lab here on campus. I have the business. I've worked in several jobs, like real jobs. Thank God, not right now. But I tell people all the time, I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to convince people to buy something from you or, you know, give you money and a grant to do some research or whatever, like they have to like you first. They have to know what you're about. Mm-hmm. Like they know that it's authentically coming from you. And that is sort of how I'm trying to tie this all together. It's like, I try to get out there. I try to do lives. I try to share little bits of my process. I share pretty openly when I'm like, you know what? I just couldn't pull it together today. I'm going to have to try again tomorrow, or, you know, kids are sick and life is life. And I think, you know, people just really appreciate that. And I don't do as many lives as I want to because my house is crazy, but I have to do more of that so that I can share more of like, hey, this is my real authentic self. This is why I do this. I care about, you know, I care about each item that I make. My hands touch every single item that comes out of here from start to finish. And if, you know, I have, if people have issues, if there's a problem with anything, I'm the person that answers those. I fix it every single time. I try to have the best customer service because I really, people want that full experience. They want to feel good about what they're supporting, what they've bought, not just, you know, something that goes right in the trash, like 2 weeks down the road, and then you're upset and you're not fulfilled with that purchase that you made. That's what I don't want to happen. So all of those things. So providing support for me to actually extend that to my community is important. Being able to know and understand and relate to Native stories like mine, because yes, they're different, but they're not that different. You know, I think that people can relate to where I've come from, even though, you know, maybe they've never even been to a reservation. Yes, I grew up on a reservation, but guess what? It's not that much different. So, yeah, just having that backstory. I'm really big on like the story, right? And yeah, our tradition is storytelling, and I want people to know my story when they have that piece. And I feel like I've done an okay job with that so far, but there's always just more work to do.
Yeah, that, wow.
I think for me, the fulfillment piece just stuck out a lot of having like this whole well-rounded experience, even with just being a consumer and making more intentional purchases. And
yeah,
like, you don't have to have 1,000 of something in every colorway to just have them, like knowing where each piece comes from, knowing the person that created it. Like, that's really special.
Yes, absolutely. And when I talk to like my aunt, for example, she's just got this pile of blankets. So in our culture, it's common to gift blankets also, for different events. And I feel like that, you know, because I've had people that say, can you just take this blanket? Like, I love this blanket, but I have got 5 and I don't know what else to do with them. They're just sitting in a closet. So can you just take a blanket? And they're so happy to, like, share and know that it turned into these things that people love so much. And so that, I really love that whole re-envisioning piece where I'm like, okay, and it's sustainable, right? I'm using just the same thing. I've even, when I did the craft shows, I wouldn't barely have any waste. I was obsessed with like using every single piece of the blend. So I made everything from, you know, the jackets, the bags, and then all the way down to the fanny packs at one point. And then I made like little sunglass pieces that were just like 2 little tiny strips. And then my kids helped me make these like little pennant banners where I just cut triangles out of the rest of them and glued them for a garland, for a Christmas tree garland. And
oh,
so
fun.
We like used every single piece. I'm not so great at that now, but my kids still use my scraps for dressing up there. My daughter just by herself went and sat at my machine and started making clothes for the Barbie dolls.
She's super
talented. Yeah, so I always tease her like, maybe one day you'll come work with mom. Oh, you think?
You're like, this feels familiar.
Yeah, so yeah, for sure. And so I that makes me feel good, right? Like being able to repurpose these things and with a, I don't know, wool is antimicrobial, has antibacterial properties. I feel good about using the wool. We have a strong relationship even, you know, in the area of Pendleton. You know, they tell the story pretty well through Pendleton also, but Cunningham Sheep has a good relationship sort of with the area also. And so it's like a real, I don't know, like a little micro economy, right? Where like the sheep herders are there, and it just feels good to be able to use those pieces and to like reclaim them a little bit. I say reimagine and reclaim because yes, I will acknowledge that it seems like maybe they took our name with maybe not our permission, right? To call one of their blankets, Cayuse blanket, but then not really, you know, share much, but they've gotten a lot better. But I absolutely view it as sort of reclaiming some of that and maybe being able to even add that story piece or a version of the story piece that should go with those designs.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that because I've been sitting here kind of since you first started telling your story thinking about the like reclaiming, repurposing, re-envisioning and how that is kind of all-encompassing. Like it comes down to even the materials you're using and the message they're sending that like you get to you're now claiming, reclaiming that and you know, making your own story about it, like kind of the story that we all should have known from the start.
Yeah. And I'm still getting better at that piece. Like I said, the business kind of all snowballed. So yeah. I can tell people still kind of working backwards a little bit because if I had been able to spend like 100% of my focus on this business, it would look different. You know, I would have more of those pieces together, but because I'm kind of, I don't know, just holding on to my hat as we go along here, I'm still kind of having to backtrack and like update things as I'm able, you know, updating things, more things that are relatable to that story on my website so that it's accessible. Like I have an about the maker, but I'm in the process of revamping the whole website just to include more of this stuff that has become so important for me to share that I want to make available to people who are visiting or want to know more.
Yeah, this already feels like a huge step, though. I mean, there's so much misrepresentation, especially in the Western industry and especially around Indigenous communities and really the roots of everything that we kind of consider to be inherently Western. But I think it's so important that we're even having these conversations or that, you know, there's even a space where, you know, you can tell that story.
And I think it's ironic, too, that now this is getting, like, trying to be stolen by, like, white designers that are like, I made a cowl today out of Aztec print.
Oh.
And
you're like, no!
Oh, yeah. Like, don't start it on the Aztec.
There's one of our favorites, yeah.
That's 6 recognized tribes, and that's only the federally recognized ones. So that's a whole other podcast.
Yes,
for sure. I mean, like, I'm sitting here at my desk right now, and I have like on display all of these lovely earrings that I've bought from like Native artists that bead, right? That I can name every single artist that made every single one of them. The same with like some of the turquoise that I have, and that's one of my big pet peeves and a good friend of mine is the fake turquoise. You know, you're like, wait, how is this even it's just like mind-blowing, right? Because we have friends, I have family whose, you know, dad was from down in Second Mesa, Arizona, and you're just like, oh, the hours and the time and the generations of people that put their, you know, hearts into that jewelry, and then you're like, why is this $5? Why is like mind blowing, and it's frustrating that people don't understand that, you know, and it's the same, like the people that bead earrings, like, oh, why is this so expensive? Have you ever tried to bead anything?
I have.
But you know, that there's a whole other like conscious level that it takes to put yourself into a piece that's that big, you know, and I'm learning that now where I've planned out my daughter's whole dress. And it's just sort of an emotional experience, like thinking about, oh gosh, like my grandma did this, you know, and made that dress that I wore when I was little. And, you know, thousands of generations before her, you know, sat down in the wintertime when it was cold and like painstakingly built these magnificent dresses. Like, how am I possibly qualified to just start from scratch and feel like I can go through that, you know? So it's a very like personal, very, just touching experience, right? You're like, oof, you're like connecting with this place that you didn't know you had. And then to like, then turn around and understand that feeling and see like that these fake earrings from China or wherever they came from, you know, you're like, oh, that is so sad. that even for sale and that people buy them and wear them. That's just sort of one of our little, like a clear example of, that I can think of, but yes.
Yeah. Well, that's hard because I think a lot of times people look at it and say like, oh, I really love what they're doing. I just can't afford their work. But then still go out and buy that cheaper version or that knockoff version. And it, at that point, it just feels disrespectful.
That and it, honestly, I know this from like my own experience, the cheap crap, I buy more of it, which is going to, and then in the end cost more because I've now bought 50 pairs of earrings that I'll wear every now and then because I'm not connected to them.
Yeah,
whereas
you don't.
That I bought from like makers that I know, I deeply love those and like will build an outfit around it.
If they're an investment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they'll last longer.
Yeah.
Yes, because you value that authenticity that goes with it, right? Like it's more valuable that way and it makes you feel better. That's that whole like, you know, that fuller experience of buying something that you know what went into that. And I completely 100% agree. Every one of these, like that's sitting here, my earrings in front of me, I know that I've built a whole outfit around each one of them. So again, I'm ready to go down that road for my Vegas trip this year. So I'm getting some lightning ideas.
Yes, ma'am.
And it sounds like maybe we get to meet you in person. You're going to Vegas?
I do. I go to Vegas. My third year, I set up at South Point with Woolies from Steamboat Springs. They're awesome. They have, And so this is our third year together. I love them. And I usually go, I haven't decided exactly what days, but I will be there for sure.
Oh, we love to
hear
it. She
we
and
have
I
to
said like a weird little dance on her. She's like, yes.
Yes.
So, other than Vegas, where can people find you? Let's do the easy way. How do people find you online with Kanaini?
Yes. So my website is just kanaini.com and it's K-A-N-A-I-N-E. I post on my Instagram most of my in progress stuff. I'm working on a big batch of customs right now, but I just posted this morning that my next sale is going to be on Friday and Saturday of this week. So the 29th.
We love
and
my alarm will be set.
Yes. So cowls both days. And otherwise, yeah, just watch my Instagram. I usually put a countdown timer so that you can tell exactly when it's happening. And I link to my front page so that you can just quickly get there from my stories.
Amazing. Amazing.
Well, Sadelle, thank you so much for sitting down and speaking with us today. This was powerful and so moving. And I know Angela and I both learned a lot from this and have a lot of things to mull over. So everyone, if you don't already follow Sadelle, head on over to Kanaini on Instagram. Check out her website. If you're in Vegas, pop in, check out her work. I know
we'll
be
there.
Doing the same.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. And I can't wait to meet you. And I get to meet lots of great people in Vegas. So I'm really looking forward to it this year.
Oh, same. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of the Breaking Western Podcast season 4. Going Scott, if that time broke. We'll see you all next week.